Hi, welcome to another episode of The Conversation with me, Amanda Vicadene. This week, I'm speaking to comedian Alyssa Limperis. I first became aware of her work about 18 months ago when my dad was dying, and she had a comedy special called No Bad Days, which was so great to watch. It was one of the few times that I laughed during that period of time. As you can imagine, both of us had a lot to speak about with the death of both of our dads and what our experiences were. I hope you enjoy this conversation. It was a really meaningful one for me because it was the first time that I had spoken with anyone about my dad's dying so in depth. And I hope it's helpful. It certainly was for me. Well, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being patient with me because I tried to speak to you last year, and that was when my dad had recently died. So I'm happy we're getting to speak now. It's a year later and I can actually string a sentence together.
Totally. I'm so sorry again for your loss. And I'm glad we're chatting after the 1 year. I feel like the first year is kind of a crazy year.
Yeah. I mean, of all people to understand, I knew you would.
But of course.
Yeah, it was definitely a difficult year, a year of so much. So, okay, let's talk about how you got to be on my radar, which is when my dad was dying, I started frantically Googling everything and anything I could to hear about other people's perspectives and what their experiences were. And somehow in my Google search, your name came up because you were putting out a special called No Bad Days, which was about the death of your dad. And I thought, wow, who is this woman who is turning this experience into something that can be shared with the world? So I would love to talk to you about your experience with death and how you took that experience and turned it into a creative venture that can help so many people, because obviously it's not the most humorous experience, but there is humor involved in it.
Yeah. You almost need laughter like more in those times because your lows are so low that you're almost like building up in your body. It's like so heavy that the need for a laugh is so much bigger. So I remember, especially in that time when my dad was dying, it was like some of the biggest laughs in the insanity of what was happening, or just a release at the end of the day from a small joke, because yeah, you really needed it more so than on a normal day when you're just kind of floating by and things are a little bit more okay. You don't maybe need the laugh quite as much.
Had you had any experience with death before your dad died?
Not in a real way. I mean, it's sort of like heartbreak where I thought I did. And then when I lost my dad, I was like, oh, I didn't know anything about death, because it just felt like a death that was like, and I'm sure you feel this, but it was a part of me dying too, which I hadn't felt with other deaths. My grandpa, my papu, lived with us growing up, and I was really close with him, and he passed away, but he was quite old and he lived a great life, and it was really sad, but I don't remember the floor falling out feeling of how do I move forward.
Yeah, that's a good description, the floor falling out. I likened it to sort of being untethered, where you're like, oh, I might just float off. There is nothing tethering me. I don't know where the ceiling is on this. It's going to it's going to keep going.
Totally, totally. And yeah, that's nothing you can prepare for. And also, it makes you feel so grateful. Like, oh, I didn't even realize how much you were grounding me, how big of an impact you were having on my life, because with you gone, I'm floating.
Yeah. Did your dad die suddenly, or what was the circumstance?
So yeah, my dad was super healthy, and then he started having headaches, and then he went to get a scan, and they found out it was brain cancer. And from that moment, there was a year from there till he passed away of just a sort of slow decay, I would say. So in a way, it was beautiful. I got to move home. My brother moved home. We all spent a lot of time together. We had this sort of beautiful, horrible year. And then the other half is obviously, it was just like, talk about untethered, that I just remember this feeling of like, it's untethering as we speak, and I'm watching it untether, and I can't stop it. And it was just an overwhelming feeling.
Yeah, it was the same with my dad. Very healthy, and got a diagnosis of bile duct cancer, and it was within a year, you know, gone. Mm. It's actually a very short period of time. I mean, I think about, obviously, people lose people to sudden accidents or murder or overdose or sudden death is obviously a whole different experience than what you experienced and what I experienced with my dad.
Yes.
But one of the most bizarre things for me was I felt like this was like a room in my house that I had always known was there, but I had never needed to go into.
Mm.
And suddenly when they get that diagnosis and you get that information, it's like you, some invisible door opened and you walked into a room that you have never been in before.
Yeah.
And you are learning a language
yeah.
that you've never spoken.
Yeah.
And you're having these experiences that you never had before.
Yeah, same. And I mean, there's a lot of, obviously, language around birth. We know a lot about birth, and it's like death is so scary that we don't want to talk about it, kind of rightfully. But then when it happens, it's like, oh my God, yeah, this is the first time I'm hearing about this. How do we handle it? And I don't think any of us really knew. And my dad didn't really love talking about it. Did your dad?
Nope, he didn't. And I'm such a talker. I'm like, same. Oh, let's talk about this and get it all out and process it. And my dad, I would call him, and every morning I'd say, hi, daddy, how are you? And said, well, I'm still here. So he sort of knew, and he had an amazing sense of humor. My dad,
totally,
highly inappropriate. And he was still making us laugh, even the last few days.
Wow. What strength. I mean, that's what kind of my show was born from. And it sounds like your dad was the same, was just watching someone face death. And when you're watching someone get close to death and you're that close to them, you're looking at death. It was very crazy to be like, I'm also looking at death, but I don't have to walk with it all the way. And you have to walk with it all the way. And I'm fucking freaking out. And you're strongly smiling. I just was blown away. I was like, I can't believe what I'm witnessing. I can't believe I'm witnessing someone walk into this with such strength.
Yeah, I felt the same way, because if you think about all the things people do in the world to avoid facing their own mortality, you know, like people go far and deep to avoid that reality. It's the only inevitability. We're born, everything else in between is like, we don't know what's going to happen, but what we do know is going to happen is at some point we're all going.
Yes.
And yet there's no preparation within our culture. How come in Western culture, there's no preparation. There's no conversation. There's no dialogue. It's like, oh, put old people away in the homes in these assisted living so we don't have to see people who are close to death.
Right.
And let's get them out of sight, out of mind. And it really made me face everything that's wrong with our culture that does not expose us as young people growing up, does not make death part of our life journey.
Totally. Yeah. And I don't know if you felt this, but did you have any hospice folks help you all out?
Wow, the hospice people. I mean,
what a angels. It's almost like we should all have to take a
class. Instead of how at school they teach boring shit, like, you know, whatever, economics and cooking or whatever. No, teach us all about death, please.
Yes, because you're right. We were faced with this dual challenge. If we at least had some knowledge of it, there'd be some, I don't know. It was all just shocking.
I have a friend whose wife is a death doula.
Mm.
And one of my best friends is an end-of-life hospice worker and has been for 28 years. Ooh. And so I am very familiar with a lot of her patients and the stories that she's told me for a long time. In fact, 20 years ago, I did a project where I photographed and interviewed her patients in the last week of their lives. So I'd always been curious about death because I like subjects that are shrouded in shame. I'm really into those things. Yes. So I was like, great, death is one of those things and I'm going to learn more about it. So I had done this project with her and her patients. So I had an interest and I had awareness, and I had this one friend who obviously has told me a lot over the years. But when my dad was dying, a friend of mine said, maybe you should speak to my wife. She's a death doula. And I thought, God, that really makes sense. The same way as we need doulas to usher lives into the world, we need doulas to usher lives out. It makes sense.
Totally.
And she helped me understand very practical things about the physicality of death, that I'm pleased I had that education, because when my dad would do things, like at a certain point, he started having hallucinations about things in the past, or he would say, where is that bag of mine. And it was like, well, that was, you had that when you were in your 20s.
Right.
You know, well, no, I put it on the floor there. And you're like, eh. So when that would happen, I would call her and say, what's going on? She'd say, oh, yeah, that's right. That should be happening about 2 weeks before. Mm. You know, so I had these kind of markers. And I'm glad I had someone who could help educate me about the stages of death.
So true. Because I know definitely in my home, there was, and I mean, I don't blame any of us, but I'm like, there was just so much resistance to death. So every step of the way was taken to like try with all of our might to stop death from happening up until towards the end. I think you're right. If we, as I don't know, had chatted with a doula or had more information around it, maybe we would have been able to all reach like an acceptance a little earlier and then just sit in those moments. Versus, I just remember feeling so much frenetic energy all the time of like, is there something more I can be doing to save my dad's life? Which is like, that's not useful. That didn't give me more time with my dad. It just made me more anxious.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I remember saying to my stepmom, he knows he's going. So I think it's okay that we talk about this. And she'd say, no, I don't want him to think that we've given up on him.
Right, right.
I was like, but it's happening.
Right. And it's not that. There's no giving up. It is what it is.
It's acceptance.
Yeah. And that's probably maybe where the cultural thing comes in. And I'm from Massachusetts. It's like, we're fighters. We're like, we're not going down. We're like, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, it was a crazy time. I mean, and then that first year, I really remember every month feeling so painful or weird because you have a memory of the last time that event happened, the person was there. So you've done a good thing by getting through that first year, because that's a hard year. That's a hard year. It's a real transition year.
Yeah. I still go to call my dad and then I'm like, oh, wait, he's not here.
Yes. Of course.
That's weird.
Because you have however many years of him being alive to one of not. It's your body doesn't know yet. It doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a voice message that he left me on my birthday that I have on my phone. And I sometimes just sit in bed and listen to it.
Oh, the amount of breakdowns I've had in an Apple store being like, you can't lose the voicemails. You can't lose the voice. Promise me you got the voicemails.
I know.
Like 20 something guy with tattoos being like, yeah, we're good, ma'am. We're good.
I know.
I mean, I have this up on my wall. I don't know if that's in frame.
What does it say?
Just an email from my dad that said, had a great time. And he's just telling me he had a good time hanging out. Just, yeah. Yeah.
It's wild, isn't it? And there's a video that my brother sent me of my dad walking the dog. And the dog is like backing up and trying to shit on his foot. And my dad is like, the language coming out of his mouth, you know, is, it's just, I just laugh, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We're meeting each other at different journeys because now I'm at year 8 and have done this show.
Is it that long?
Yeah, and I've done the show for so long where I talk about my dad and I wrote a lot of blogs. I mean, all I remember is just this feeling of needing to talk about it all the time.
Incessantly.
Yeah, and now I'm at this stage where it's so, man, I don't know if this is sad or happy, but it's like it's just so far away. It's not really even... There's not a lot of markers in my life that look the same. So it's kind of weird. I don't have a lot of tangible moments of missing, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. It's more just sort of in.
It's integrated into the fabric of you now.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Or it comes up in ways that look different, that look like anger or.
Yeah, anger is a really interesting one because I spoke with somebody the other day who expressed that she went through so much rage and that she became a rager in grief.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, wow. Because I went through that where I was just furious.
Yes.
And it's a really uncomfortable, especially for women, to have rage is like really not acceptable in society.
Totally. Totally.
Like, where do you put that, you know?
I know.
Well, you put a lot of it into your show.
Yeah, that helped.
You've probably heard about probiotics and the importance of a healthy gut microbiome. Well, I've got some news for you. Over 15 years of research on the vaginal microbiome have revealed that our gut isn't the only part of our body that thrives on an optimal microbiome. For years, Seed has been my go-to for improving my family's gut health, so I'm excited that Seed has launched VSO1 Vaginal Symbiotic. Your period, exercise, diet, sex, this can all mess with your vaginal microbiome, making it sensitive to imbalances and unwanted, uncomfortable issues. And I don't need to tell you that there's nothing worse than feeling like something is off with your vagina. That's why I'm so into Seed's VSO1. It's the first vaginal probiotic suppository designed to nourish your vagina with the essential biome it needs to flourish. I've read the research and I've interviewed the scientist behind VSO1, and I've decided to give my vagina the attention she deserves. If you want to check it out, please go to seed.com/AmandaC and use 25AmandaC for 25% off your first month supply of Seed.
Okay, so let's talk about why you decided and how you did that. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, basically, I moved to New York, had started doing some comedy here and there. So maybe had a solid 10 or 20 minutes of comedy. That was not about my dad, obviously. I went home, and then once he died, I was like, my stand-up talks about my life. And so it all of a sudden became like, well, this is my life. I have to talk about it. So I started doing some stuff almost immediately at open mics, and it wasn't really the place for it. So I was like, maybe I need to put this all in a show so that people come to it knowing what they're getting. So I'm not surprising people with
death jokes. What happened when you did it on open mic? Were people just, they did just fall flat?
You know, they were difficult shows to begin with because you have not a lot of people in the audience. And I had this show that was in a restaurant. I think they were called Bombarding. It's not that word, but something like that, where people don't know they're getting a show. So it's like people are out to dinner.
They're trying to like eat the pasta and suddenly a comedian comes on talking about death.
There was this couple, this like Norman Rockwell cute couple in their 80s sharing a plate of spaghetti. And I'm totally unprocessed screaming about my dad being in a coma with no punchline yet. And I just remember the feeling of ruining everyone's night and getting home on the train and being like, well, I can't stop talking about it, but I can't keep doing it this way. So I had written all these blogs that were very serious. They weren't funny at all.
Where are the blogs?
I think you should still be able to find them on my website, alyssalimparis.com.
Okay.
They're archived now, but I think I have a section for blogs still. So I started being like, well, there's serious stuff I want to talk about and there's jokes. So what if I made a bit of a theatrical show?
Which is not easy to create any humor around death. It was a very aspirational move on your part.
Thanks so much. It's so funny because it's like, it feels brave to me now, but I think at the time I had no other, my dad was really funny and I had no other language. I felt like maybe I almost needed the laughter as well. Like maybe it had been such a dark year that I was like, I need to find some joy in it. It didn't feel like a choice, really. It felt
I understand. I mean, okay, when you told your team and when you said, this is the show I want to do and let's try to sell this and find a home for it, did everyone tell you, oh, no one's going to want anything about death? Everyone's come out of COVID. There's been too much death around. No one's going to buy this. Maybe you should reconsider this, Alyssa. Did you get that speech?
Okay, so this is a big thing that I'm a big proponent of. So no, that's not really how it happened. So I'm a big believer in you have to just create art that you want to create. And then at some point, there might be a home for it. There might not. But if you're just doing what you want to do, then that's your North Star. So I did that show before I had any reps, before I had any team. I was a waitress.
How did you film it?
Well, I filmed that show. I started this in 2016. I ran it for a few years, went to festivals and everything. And then at a certain point was crying every single time, like weeping. And that was when I was like, oh, my body's done laughing at this. And now it needs to cry about this and process it a different way. And so I stopped it. I had filmed a few versions of that. Stopped the show completely, pretty much stopped stand-up and started really acting and doing character acting. And then in the pandemic, one of my friends who was a producer at the time, he now works at SNL, but he was Mike DiCenzo. He was like consulting at Peacock and he had been to my show 4 years prior. And he texted me being like, Peacock is looking for untraditional specials. And I remember you having one. Do you happen to have a film version of it? And I was like, I do. It's not great audio, but I have it. And I sent it. And then that's where it started. Then from there, we met with the big team and we talked about how I could adjust it. And then I went on the road touring the new version of it. And then I filmed that special 2 years ago.
Wow. That is such a hopeful story.
Isn't it? So I tell this people, if you have a project and you write it or you and it doesn't, quote, go anywhere, it's there still. So it just might not be the time. It's not lost work.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, yeah, I have a project that I've started making about death and dying because I have to. And you know, I keep getting told, well, no one's going to be interested in death. I said, I don't care. I'm interested in it. I'm interested in it. And I have to tell these stories. And so I'm doing it.
You're a human being. So it's like, we're not all that different. So if you as a human being who's gone through this universal experience are feeling this way, of course people are going to want to.
Of course. Of course they
are. What did we both do the minute our dads got diagnosed? We both frantically searched online. I looked up people and I found Nora McInerney. She'd written blogs. Her husband died of the same thing my dad died of. It's like, no, we need more stuff about it. It's the first thing people do when they get a diagnosis.
So I'm doing it. And I know how to shoot. My first show, The Conversation, I made from my living room.
Yes.
Everyone was like, no one's going to buy this and no one's going to come and do these interviews. I was like, all right, I'll make it. And
exactly.
I did.
Exactly. You know?
And that show was syndicated to 19 different countries around the world.
Let's go. So and that,
I'm a big advocate for really making what you creatively feel connected to. And I feel like, well, if I'm interested in this, for sure, there'll be other people who are because I'm making it because I want it. It doesn't exist what I'm trying to make because
that's exactly
it. And I think it needs to.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And I think as long as you are making stuff you really like, you also tend to not care about the outcome as much. I find I care about the outcome when I don't really love what I'm making. Cause then I'm like, well, it has to be worth something because I made it. Whereas if I just like what I'm making, I don't care as much about the outcome.
Yeah. You're like, well, I'm making this thing, it better count. As opposed to, I'm making this because I creatively have to get this out in the world. I have to tell these stories.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you're saying that this is 8 years now. So what stories do you feel compelled to tell now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I just went home maybe a year ago to say goodbye to my childhood home, which is where my dad died. Yeah, it was just an emotional time. And I came back from that and I ended up writing a movie about a single mom who's a runner who gets a second chance at running years after her dad dies. I had this experience of the solo show, and this is almost about the long-term impacts of grief and of giving up a little bit when you lose a part of yourself. So I feel like movies and TV shows are now how I feel a little bit more comfortable because I can add fiction to it. So I can add a little bit of a protective layer of fiction. So I'm not exactly telling my direct story.
Yeah, you're not so vulnerable and not so exposed.
Exactly, exactly. And I think sometimes you can be more honest with fiction because you're not scared of
hurting anyone's
feelings. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And then my other thing is just nonsense comedy, like really fun, goofy, joyful comedy. Those are kind of my two lanes. And maybe as I talk it out, I'm like, maybe I'm trying to separate the two where I want to write either drama or really joyful comedy. Like I just did a show last night with my friend called Wake Up Long Island at UCB. And it's just about these two horrible women who have a talk show.
Dawn, I want to see that. Next time you do that, will you let me know?
I 100% will. So I think that's where I'm at. And I made this mockumentary called Knives with my friend because we were just like, we have to make something that feels joyful and stupid. So I feel
what's
like
that about?
That's literally about two desperate Cutco knife saleswomen who are just trying to make a sale because the cameras are there and they're pretty incompetent, but they love each other and they're confident.
Oh my God.
So I do find myself now to be in a space of like, oh, I want to create stuff that's very joyful and that I have pure fun making. And then on the side also, like I'm going to write movies about darker things so that.
Have you always written like this?
Yeah, I love writing. I always kind of write stuff for myself. So I don't know how great I'd be at just writing like a random thing. It's kind of
being like a gun for hire
blogging.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe you need a Substack.
Yeah, maybe a Substack. I don't know. I was on some show and they were like, tell us a secret or something. I'm like, I've told everything. I've told too much to the internet. So I feel maybe in a way now where I'm like, yeah, I'm more looking to express myself through stories and through acting than direct me to you. Until who knows, maybe something in my life will happen that will compel me to do that again.
But I also think that when you write your own story, you have a lot more agency over how those narratives are told. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of narratives about women's lives are written by men.
Totally.
And or misrepresented because people think that, oh, an audience doesn't want to really hear about that or know about that. So, well, actually they do, because 52% of the population, which is female, is having these experiences.
Yes. And I think this Knives, like a couple friends who've seen it are like, these women are not, they're not likable. They're not really sexual. They're very just like, I think the characters that we wrote could very easily just be written. Could be played by men. And that's kind of my goal. It's like,
oh, yeah, interesting.
Well, there's nothing different. You don't have to have it be like, once there's women in the role that we're wearing like stilettos. It's like, why? That's no. Like, I loved Mare of Easttown so much because I felt like, oh, did you watch that?
No, but I know about it.
Yeah, she was just great. And I was like, yeah, this is a very real woman to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also putting a woman forward who isn't focused on her sex being the exactly. most interesting thing about her.
That's right.
Which,
that's right.
Quite frankly, for me, the fact that I have a vagina is like, all right, okay, that's like the last thing on the list of interesting
exactly.
things about me.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what you do next.
Thanks. Yeah, same with you. I can't wait to see your grief and death project. I think it's sorely needed.
Thank you. I'm in process with it, and I look forward to showing it to you when I get the thing done.
Please do.
Let's stay in touch.
Okay, I will. I will. And my special is called No Bad Days on Peacock, if you're interested in watching, listeners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is so worth seeing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. This was great. Thanks
you're
for
welcome.
Having me.
Thank you. Bye, Alyssa.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to that fantastic episode. Please like, subscribe, and all that business. It does really help the podcast. And most importantly, come join me on Substack. Substack is where I'm showing the video of the entire episode that you just listened to. So find me on Substack if you want to dig in a bit deeper to the subjects that we talked about in this episode. See you there.